and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. In light of India's recent export ban on non-basmati white rice, tonight on the show, we'll focus on the cornerstone of Malaysia's food security, which is the paddy industry and rice production. Now, with climate change hitting yields and price spikes from the war in Ukraine happening with increasing frequency, we seem to be on the cusp of a global food crisis. Now, let's investigate the vulnerabilities and resilience of Malaysia's food security with my first guest tonight, Dr. Serena Che Omar. She's the Deputy Director of Research at Khazanah Research Institute, where she focuses on policies related to food, agriculture, and sustainability. Dr. Serena, to start our conversation, what do you think viewers need to understand about the current state of Malaysia's paddy industry and rice production? Maybe you could begin by giving us a brief overview of Malaysia's domestic rice situation.
Okay, first of all, thanks, Melissa, for having me over. So Malaysia, we produce some and we import some, right? So in total, we consume about 2.7 million metric ton of rice per year. Out of that 2.7 million metric ton, 60 to 65% we produce domestically, and the rest we import. Now, out of that 60 to 65% that we produce domestically, it is not what we say monotonous or consistent across the whole country. Actually, it is not. The majority of the rice that we produce is from the northern states of Peninsula. They produce about more than 60% of the total domestic production, whereas in East Malaysia, Sabah and Sarawak contributes only for about 10% of our domestic rice production.
Okay, all right. Let's come back to how the government is dealing with the current crisis at hand. We understand that you were part of a budget dialogue session with the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security on the issue of rice supply. Serena, what can you share with us about the concerns that are on the table at the moment? Are we focusing on the most pertinent issues, the most pertinent strategies? What have been your observations?
Okay, so there's definitely a lot of talk about global rice prices going up. But like I say, it's about 40%. The big chunk of our rice supply is domestic production. So the bigger concern right here, right now, Melissa, is actually supply of product. Now, we got to remember, as for Act 522, our price of domestic rice has a ceiling price to it. So it's not a price issue, it is a supply and production issue. So like I said, I don't have the latest data, it is not being released, but I do have 2021 data and all the way back. And if we look at the general trend of production from 2017 up to 2021, we have a slight decline in the domestic production of rice, and that is rather worrying.
Okay, Serena, did I read correctly that the government has asked rice millers and wholesalers to increase production by at least 20%? So increase production of local white rice, paddy beras tempatan, by 20%. How feasible is that and how quickly can they scale up?
I'm not too sure about that. And I don't know if you can do it immediately. There is always possibility. Now, I think when they mean by increasing by 20%, I think you're talking about the production. So it comes back to the farming level. Now, of course, there's actually a lot of room that we can improve production, even without creating more land. Just by increasing productivity per hectare, there is room to do it. It can involve, for example, good agricultural practices, using effective technologies, good fertilizer practices, as well as using MyGap. So all these practices, there is room to increase production, and maybe that is something we can achieve. Now, if you ask me, can we achieve 100% self-sufficiency within 1 year? Of course not. But is there potential to grow our production? Absolutely.
Why aren't we 100% self-sufficient in our rice production and supply, Serena, given how much 2.7 million kilos that we eat every year? Why aren't we 100% self-sufficient? Are most rice-producing countries self-sufficient?
No, not all of them. And, Melissa, Just because you are 100% rice self-sufficient does not mean that you are food secure. So I'll give you an example of Vietnam and Thailand, who is a rice exporting country, so they produce more than 100%, but they scored lower than Malaysia in the global food security ranking because rice is important, I agree. But there are other factors involved in ensuring food security, nutrition, eating healthily, food safety, climate change, sustainability, and all these play a part in ensuring food security for the country. Now, if you ask me, is it possible to achieve 100%? Actually, at any, it's just how much you're willing to spend in order to achieve 100% self-sufficiency. You can spend 10 billion, 100 billion, and you can achieve 100% self-sufficiency. Question is, do we want to spend that amount of money to achieve it? And even if we do achieve it, do we truly achieve to be a food secure country? My opinion is that we should balance between achieving a high self-sufficiency, but it may not be 100%, but our rice is produced safely. It is, we are able to sell at a price that the farmers are able to have good income, so it's not poverty-stricken farmers. So we don't force them to plant rice at all costs, at times at the cost of them not earning enough. So if we can have that balance, I think that would be really, really healthy for the country.
Is that a current concern that small-scale producers are, or small farmers are being asked to produce at a low cost, that they are themselves living in poverty?
There are a lot of pressure to produce rice, especially in the northern states, in the certain areas within Malaysia. And you know, a lot of the farmers, in fact, they don't plant paddy on its own as their own source of income because it's just not enough. And they, what they have to do is they have to do other jobs as well to supplement. So certainly, it is not a job that is the most lucrative thing you can do. And we need to ask ourselves: is this as a country, is this a strategy that we want?
Okay, all right. So, given all the everything that you've just said and all the immediate challenges that Malaysia is facing, but also the long-term challenges of ensuring food security beyond just production and supply, as you mentioned earlier, Serena, what would you like to see policymakers focus on in the short term and in the long term?
Okay, I've got two really important things. Now, I did say yes, food security is a wholesome thing, but we can't forget that rice is a very important part to everyone, right? To you and to me, and we love it. So production is still important and we shouldn't ignore it. Now, when 60% of our national production is centered around just one region in the northern states of Malaysia, that can pose a risk factor because, for example, if there's one big tornado or one drought happening, there goes 60% of our domestic production. So the strategy for the country is to dilute the focus from one region. And I think we should focus on increasing the rice production in Sabah and Sarawak, and not just what we call lowland wetland rice, but also hill rice, which has a huge potential. And that comes to my second point, Melissa, that Malaysia should allow and liberalize our specialty rice, allow our specialty rice to be exported, to move across state, and let that segment grow. Now, let's not talk about the cheap rice that is being controlled. There's a price control for it, and that's for the domestic market. But we actually have another segment, Melissa, which is called the specialty rice. And if we liberalize this, we allow for export, we allow it to grow, what's going to happen? The segment's going to grow. And when the segment grow, there's going to be spillover effect right into our domestic cheap rice industry. So I think a way to create competitiveness in our industry is by liberalizing our specialty rice segment.
Serena, you mentioned earlier that rice production in Sabah and Sarawak is 10% of our current supply. Why is it only at 10%? What are the challenges in increasing that ratio?
I mean, there are various challenges. Number one is that agricultural practices may not be at the optimum level. Number two, I think we've only just recently, compared to the granary areas in the Northern Hemisphere, we've only just introduced granary areas in Sabah and Sarawak. So they need time to increase their infrastructure and their concentration. And like I said, there are two types of rice here, Melissa. There are the hill rice and the lowland rice. And the lowland rice in Sabah, Sarawak has also gotten a lot of attention because they are bulk, they can grow very fast, and they can fulfill the carbohydrate as a quantity. But in hill rice, which is low yield, so they don't produce as much, but they have a lot of special properties like taste, pigments, texture, and they can be sold at a premium price, and they have a huge potential to improve the income of the rural people. And to me, these two, we should concurrently improve the rice production in Sabah and Sarawak to make sure that they can increase their production.
Dr. Serena Che Umar, thank you so much for joining me on the show there. We're going to take a very quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. Let's continue our discussion on the vulnerabilities and resilience of Malaysia's paddy industry and rice production, all of which are the cornerstone of Malaysia's food security. Joining me on the show now is Dr. Shafiq Fahmi Siddiq. He is a professor of agricultural economics at UPM and director of the university's Institute of Plantation Studies. Professor Shafiq, thank you for being on the show today. I'm hoping you can begin with your thoughts, your take on the current situation, on the India export ban on non-basmati white rice, on Bernas raising prices of imported rice by 36%. What's your take on this? What are your concerns about the current situation?
Okay, I think all of us are aware that rice prices have been going up recently, and at the current level, the prices are for the past 15 years, and we're seeing the prices today are really, really high. And recently, when India announced that they are not going to export white rice, this again sending a signal to the market, sending shocks, and implying that we'll be facing some kind of global shortage. India is one of the major exporters. We import close to 40% of our rice, and 30% of that comes from India. But we do not know what is the proportion of white rice from India. Only Bernas knows, and until that, it's very difficult for us to comment.
Right. Yeah, so they're not releasing that information. So only Bernas will know which countries they're importing from. Can I ask you, Professor Shafiq, could this have been anticipated? The fact that India's export ban, is that something that's unexpected to the market? Because of, you know, weather patterns affecting yields, can those things be anticipated? And can countries like Malaysia, who import a specific amount of rice, can we anticipate and prepare in advance?
Well, this is not unprecedented. We've seen India always announcing export bans. We've seen them announcing that they will not be exporting onions, for an example, before. And because of global shortage, they are trying to secure domestic supply, and hence the announcement that we heard recently. But what is more concerning is when you ask me about Bernas's price hike. Mm. Well, that I think we should have anticipated that, because with current prices, Bernas will not be able to cover the costs of purchase. They will lose money right at the point of purchase. Right now, Thai white rice 5% broken, and Vietnam white rice, they're trading around $640 per ton. And looking at today's exchange rate, we're trading at around 4.5 ringgit to a dollar, and And taking that into consideration, the cost and freight alone is going to be around 2,900 ringgit. And that is not, we have not included operating costs. And how do you expect Bernas to sell imported white rice at the previous price level, 2,250 or 2,350? So,
okay. Isn't Bernas a private company owned by Syed Mokhtar Al-Bukhari? I mean, is this an issue that Bernas needs to solve, or does the government need to step in with policy interventions?
Well, Bernas, we all know that this is a monopoly by Bernas. Bernas is the only entity allowed to import rice. This works when border prices are low. If we allow everybody to import rice into Malaysia when prices are low, then the market will be flooded by cheap imports, making it difficult for our local producers. I mean, the reason why we have Bernas is because we wanted to protect the domestic rice industry. Okay, but then again, those are the times where Bernas is making a lot of money, making money. They will profit because they buy low and they're able to sell high. But at times like this, when prices are high, as a business, it's not going to be feasible for them to be selling at previous price level. Now, it's if the price hike is intermittent or temporary, then it's fine. Maybe they're able to weather it out. But when the price hike is persistent and we expect the price to go up even further, Bernas cannot sustain by selling at, 2,300 ringgit per ton. It's not possible.
Okay, because at the end of the day, it's the consumers that will have to fork out a hefty price tag for a basic necessity like rice. Can I ask you, what policy tools are at the disposal of the government
that might work in this situation?
Before we even go there, I would like to when you say that the consumers will have to fork out a lot of money, let's look at the price difference from before and now. Mm-hmm. Before it was 2,250, now it's 3,200. And if we work it out per kilogram, there will be an increase of $1.20. Our per capita consumption is 79 kilograms a year. And if you multiply that by 1.20, it will work out to an extra 90 ringgit per person per year. For a household of five, is going to be, slightly less than 500 ringgit. It's not going to be a big deal for middle income population or high income population. They're not going to have a problem with this. The only people that would probably be will be affected by this are the poor. Mm. And if we are looking at consumer welfare, what the government should do is probably have a more targeted subsidy by probably giving lower income group rice coupons, for an example, as possible, rather than trying to cap price low. Because what is happening right now is the government is imposing a price ceiling on local white rice. And the outcome is that you don't see local white rice in the market anymore. That's the complaint, right? So there have been allegations that producers, suppliers are repackaging local white rice as imported white rice so that they can sell at a higher price, which is not unanticipated, This is, to me, even more concerning, because you think that you can keep price low by putting a cap on a homogeneous product. See, local white rice and imported white rice, what's the difference between that? We're talking about two homogeneous products. They look the same, they taste the same. Can you tell the difference between local white rice imported from Thailand and white rice produced in Malaysia, Melissa?
Not at
No, right?
all. No.
So what do you expect? This is what you see. And let's look at what happens at the mill. See, previously we have we have what we call a GMP policy, guaranteed minimum price policy for paddy. That is to protect our paddy producers. It was set at 1300 per ton, and millers were selling at 2250. Now, right now, from what I heard, farmers are able to sell at higher prices now, around 1700 per ton. You cannot expect the millers to sell again at the same price, 2250. Now, there are price ceilings not only at the mill level but also at wholesale, and we kept the price at retail for 2 ringgit 60 cents per kilogram. Now, given the current price, it's almost impossible for there's no margin. We're not talking about tightening now, we're talking about practically no margin for millers and wholesalers. It's not a practical policy if you ask me to keep the price low. And again, wouldn't you what would the farmers say? Global prices are high, but they have to sell their paddy at low prices. It does sound right, doesn't it?
So, are you saying that what we need beyond the short-term targeted subsidies or targeted help for those for the poor, are you saying that for the market, the paddy production, the paddy industry, and the rice production industry, that we need to liberalise this sector? Are you saying that we need to lift all the price controls and government interventions in this sector?
Well, I would say, yeah, for local white rice, why do you cap the price at 2250? Let the farmers sell at higher prices and make sure that the millers, wholesalers keep the margin. And it's only fair to do that. And we have calculated just now the impact is going to be for a person around 90 ringgit per year extra.
Right. Do you don't see any unintended consequences, perhaps even, in the short term of liberalization of this market?
Well, you are already seeing the repercussion of trying to keep prices low. You can't find local white rice in the market, right? They repack it. I mean, this kind of intervention is, to me, not effective.
Understood. Thank you so much for speaking with me. Well, that was Professor Dr. Shafiq Fahmi Siddiq from from UPM, also Director of the University's Institute of Plantation Studies. That wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.